When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, as well as insight and analysis into all the topics you're talking about in football. We brought you the exclusive news that Harry Kane wanted to leave Tottenham, but we also have news today about another striker who wants to leave and potentially has a move to an English Premier League club from La Liga. Duncan, what can you tell us about João Félix?
Yeah, this is, as you say, it's a striker, another striker added to this immense merry-go-round that we think will kick into action once one of them moves somewhere, once someone puts some money into the market to allow other strikers to move along. And I suspect that the club to put the money into the market will be Manchester City or Paris Saint-Germain, who the two that do not really have financial worries in the same way as most other clubs in Europe do. João Félix, a story we broke on the Transfer Podcast some years ago now, that he would be leaving Benfica 2 summers ago, and that he would go for the release clause of 120 million euros, something that people scoffed at the time, the idea that a player would move out of Portugal for that amount of money, and especially one who was in his first season as a regular first team starter for Benfica. He was targeted by Manchester City that summer. Manchester City would like to have brought him in. Tell you a story about Chiqui Berguiristán going to watch him at Benfica's stadium and saying this is a player who will play for Manchester City at some point. They weren't able to do it at that time. They were expecting Leroy Sané to leave. We're struggling to get him to renew his contract, knew he was unhappy, knew Bayern were interested, thought that there was a good chance Bayern would put down a very large transfer fee for Sané, and then they wanted a replacement forward in and had identified Félix as being the man to replace him. Obviously Sané got injured and that delayed his move to Bayern for a year, which prevented Manchester City from buying him that summer because they were still under the auspices of financial fair play and couldn't manufacture a way of spending that amount on one player in that summer. They asked Félix to wait. Félix took the decision himself that he wanted to leave Benfica immediately and wanted to go to Atletico. They were the only club who were able to provide the money at the time. He went there. And as some people predicted, and I believe Chiqui Berguiristán was one of those, it was the wrong move for him to take because he hasn't meshed well with Diego Simeone's way of organising a football team. According to some people close to Félix, not meshed well with Diego Simeone's personality, certainly with his training methods. Félix has been suffering from a persistent ankle injury for several months now, and Simeone has been pushing him to play and train hard despite having that ankle injury, and that's caused a degree of additional dispute between the pair. And the information I have is that he will attempt to get out of Atletico this summer, but the relationship has got to a stage where he feels he has to go elsewhere, and the expectation is that that is a deal that can be done because Atletico, like everyone else, want to raise money in the market. He has been offered to Barcelona by Atletico in exchange for Antoine Griezmann, their former player, and a player who Barcelona are open to moving out this summer again for financial reasons. But I think his availability is such that it interests a lot of clubs around Europe and interests a lot of clubs who are trying to get involved in that striker merry-go-round. And here is a different option. Here is a 21-year-old. If you look at his statistical performance this season, first half of the season when he was fit, even though he wasn't always getting into the team because of tactical differences with Simeone, he had 14 La Liga starts, 7 goals and 6 assists. So his numbers are very good, as they have been for his still quite short career as a senior footballer. He presents, I think, an interesting option for Manchester City should they decide not to go for Erling Haaland, and should they stay, as you told us in the first podcast of the week, in the position that Harry Kane, at the price that Tottenham are asking for him and at the age he is at, is not the best medium-term solution to their issues. And they should go for a different forward instead. With Felix, you get a different type of player to Haaland, but kind of the same profile in a sense, in terms of age, in terms of ability to affect the play. I think a more natural fit to Manchester City, in that he is a player who combines well with his teammates and creates as well as finishing. Also, I think because he's a player who kind of thrives either playing off a central striker or playing in the space between the midfield and the front line, you can see that that is a very natural fit to the way Pep Guardiola often has his team operating, and particularly the way he's had the team operating this season. So expect to see Felix move this summer. And expect to see a number of clubs jockeying to see what the cost of that transfer will be, what Atletico are prepared to sell him for, and whether he's a better option than some of the more storied names that are on the market at present.
Having watched him, Duncan, this season, albeit in limited appearances, he does seem to me to be someone who could blend very easily into a team which combines Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne and Raheem Sterling, with regards to creating opportunities, scoring goals as well. We know that Sergio Aguero obviously is leaving in this window at the end of his contract. Do we have any idea what the price may be? Because he did move for a very large fee when he joined Atletico.
Well, the release clause was 120 million. Atletico ended up agreeing a deal for 126 million because they were only going to pay a limited percentage of that fee in the first year. So they had to subsidise kind of interest payments to Benfica for the longer period it took to meet the release clause. I think it's fluid, and I think this market is fluid. I think obviously we saw Mino Raiola pushing Erling Haaland and putting down very, very expensive sums of money as an asking price for agent's fee, 30 million euro salary net for the player, and then talking about 150 million transfer fee when Dortmund are suggesting that would be 180 million. That was in a time when Raiola and when a number of the major clubs in Europe were expecting the Super League to happen. They were expecting to have a massive injection of cash coming via JP Morgan into their bank accounts to sort out their debts and to fight for top players on the market. I think now it just, as I say, it depends on who puts money in first, where it goes and how it gets circulated around. I think the only other club that has a reasonable amount to play with is Manchester United, because they're because fundamentally the amount of revenue they make as a club, and the reserves they could create if they moved their finances around a little bit to do deals this summer. But as we said in the last podcast, that I think is dependent, as it always is with Manchester United, on Glazers' approval on spending. And whether the Glazers approve a lot of spending in this market or a medium amount of spending in this market, I think is down to public relations. It's down to the Glazers Out movement, down to the protests against them for trying to join the Super League, basically for the way they've run the club through their ownership and what they feel they need to do to appease supporters. If they feel it has to be a lot of money, then we're talking potentially about Harry Kane going there, and as you explained on Tuesday, and I think you have more detail on where Manchester United are on that negotiation and strategy to get hold of Kane at present.
Indeed. The Not a Penny More campaign by Manchester United fans. I'd love to think that one penny would be enough to buy João Félix or even Harry Kane in that sense. But yes, the Harry Kane transfer saga rumbles on. I think it's significant that there appears to be an orchestrated and clever way of dealing with this, which comes from Kane and his representatives. They obviously leaked the information that Kane had asked formally to leave the club, although has not yet requested a transfer in a formal sense. It is our information that Manchester United have made it clear to Harry Kane that should he need to push the transfer, i.e. ask for a transfer in an official sense, which of course would disbar his entitlement to a payoff on his current contract, which is around 6 million net per year currently until 2024. Meaning that he would lose out on £18 million of salary if he asked for a transfer, that those are the ways in which football works, that Manchester United are prepared to compensate him for that loss of earnings in a signing on fee, which could be paid over the length of his contract. And obviously he would expect and will be offered around twice his current deal at Tottenham Hotspur. So not only would he be earning more, but he would also get some kind of compensation fee for the wages that he gives up should he need to force his way out of Tottenham Hotspur. And that could be a very powerful way of doing things for Kane, because he has risked a lot, Duncan, at making it public with regards to his desire to leave Spurs. The Spurs fans, I think it was quite interesting on Wednesday night of this week at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium that the fans did not vent any anger on Kane. I think they obviously feel that he's given them great service, and also that if he wants to leave, then he should be allowed to leave to further his own ambition. And therefore, asking for a transfer would not in any way demean his legacy for Spurs. Also the case that financially he'd be compensated for requesting that transfer. A lot of players are not prepared to do that. But Kane's very, very stubborn, if you like, belief that this is the time for him to make a change would mean that he would forgo that particular amount of money in order to make his move somewhere else. And also that he would obviously be earning more anyway. But it was interesting in the interview he did with Gary Neville that he explained in some detail about what he felt that he needed to win trophies, that he didn't want to end his career with regrets, and also that he felt that this was the right time. And I think at his age, as we explained in an earlier podcast, he feels that this is his chance to join a club which he feels shares his ambitions and will, in his mind anyway, help him to produce the medals that he lacks thus far in his career for someone who has so much talent and has the statistics to back that up as well.
I think there are a lot of very clear statements in that interview, talking about wanting to break Alan Shearer's Premier League scoring record of 260 goals, and you're probably looking at another 4 to 5 seasons of football in England to be able to do that, saying that he wasn't particularly keen on playing outside England at this stage, mentioning a transfer fee for him. If I could get 100 million, then why not?
That was strange, wasn't it? He's put a price on his own head.
I don't think that's strange at all. I think it's part of the negotiation and part of the
orchestration.
Yes, exactly. And mentioning also that there had been conversations with Daniel Levy before, and his expectation of how Daniel Levy would try and persuade him to stay, and also talking about how he felt Tottenham had great opportunities to win titles when they failed to take the league off Leicester City, and when they had the season which took them to the Champions League, and kind of not quite directly saying, but certainly allowing you to read between the lines that that Levy hadn't invested in the team at that stage when they had the opportunities to go further. And also talking about, on a number of occasions, about his disappointment and surprise that that Jose Mourinho had been dismissed just before the League Cup final. You're talking about how Jose Mourinho has a great record of winning cup finals, and saying it was strange to him and surprised him that Levy had decided to sack him just a few days beforehand. So there was a lot of really pointed messaging in that obviously pre-prepared interview. And you know, I think it's clear that the decision has been taken, as you reported a couple of weeks ago, by Kane, that this is the summer to leave. And now he's pushing hard to make sure that happens.
Obviously, the problem he has, Duncan, is two words: Daniel Levy, or Daniel Leverage, as we like to call him on the Transfer Window podcast. He will drive a very hard bargain. Kane is under contract. However, as we both know, keeping an unhappy player at a club where he doesn't want to be never turns out well. And therefore, my expectation is that with Kane already involved in this manoeuvring to extract himself from Tottenham Hotspur, will go to the limit in order to get the move that he wants. With that being the case, Spurs obviously have to think ahead. I mean, they've now got a situation where they don't have a manager. They're about to lose, potentially, their best player. It does seem a bit of a shambles with regards to where they are right now. And it's difficult to see how they rebuild the faith, confidence and trust of their supporters for next season.
Yes, look, they had the opportunity to win a trophy, and Levy was prepared to say the Premier League position is more important to us than resting players ahead of the League Cup final, and sacking a manager and putting a 29-year-old with no experience of running of the first team in charge of a match against the best team in the country. I don't think that's gone down well with a number of people at Tottenham, and particularly people who want to win trophies, and we know Harry Kane is one of those. I think there will be a calculation here from Levy, is if I can't get a huge transfer fee, and he's indicating he will only do it for a massive fee, 150 million plus. I think there will be a calculation of, will Kane actually throw his toys out of the pram if I make him stay here? Is he that kind of character who is going to have a bad season if I don't get the deal I want in the transfer market, and if I say stay another year? I'm not sure with Kane it's so clear cut that he doesn't strike me as the kind of individual who will just desist from training properly and desist from performing on the field. Because partly because he is so focused on these kind of personal targets, that when he's talking about beating Alan Shearer's 260 goals and beating Wayne Rooney's England goal scoring record, that reminds me of Cristiano Ronaldo. That those are the kind of targets, albeit Ronaldo's doing it on a far greater scale than best scorer in the Premier League and best scorer for the England national team. But part of the reason why Ronaldo's been so successful is he has designed his career around putting up the best numbers to be regarded not just as the best footballer in history, but the best sportsman in history. And that mentality has served him well. And I think has served Harry Kane well and will continue to serve Harry Kane well. So I think that'll be a factor there. He has a big decision to make, Daniel Levy. That you have to have sympathy for him in the sense that he led and invested an immense amount of money being spent on Naming Rights Lane, which they still haven't got naming rights for. Over 1.2 billion spent in building that stadium. The plan being, once you get into it, you massively increase Tottenham's revenues from match day and you move the club onto a different scale of operation altogether. You turn what had been one of the lowest wage bills at the top end of the Premier League, certainly by a margin, the lowest wage bill of the big six. You add immensely to the revenue you can then spend on reinforcing the team, and you turn yourself into real competitors. That was the plan. That was the plan sold to Jose Mourinho. That's why Mourinho took the job, one of the central reasons why he took the job. And it all got ripped out from under him by COVID. Now, he hasn't handled that well, but a lot of it is completely unexpected and no one could have factored in. Now he has to come up with the right solution to it. And I'm not sure that the message he wrote to the Tottenham supporters ahead of the match in the week, where he started citing Tottenham's DNA, it is the right way to go about it. Whenever I hear football club executives talking about club DNA, it suggests to me that they're trying to sell a story and they don't really have a coherent plan. And they're trying to, you know, tick boxes with the supporters rather than do what needs to be done to make the team successful on the field again.
One of our socios, as we would say in Spain, or listeners, as we would say in England, pointed that one out on our Twitter feed, that when you hear a chairman talk about club DNA, the first thing you do is just basically block your ears, because it's clearly BS, as we say. Also, I would have to point out at this moment that Duncan Castles has once again surprised me by completing a sentence that I've not heard in 25 years in football, which is, you have to have sympathy for Daniel Levy. that's not something that many people definitely have. However, this is a situation which will develop. My personal feeling, Duncan, is that people I've spoken to who are close to Harry Kane say that his determination to move this situation where he gets what he wants is definite and will not end with him being forced to stay for the length of his contract, and that Levy will have to accept a sale price from the bidder who Harry Kane himself wants to join. So it will be intriguing to see how that works out. Although, as we reported on the Transfer Window podcast, Manchester United are the only very serious players in this particular game of Kane poker. Slightly easier and certainly less difficult to decide is another legendary striker of the Premier League era in Sergio Aguero, whose contract expires and has already announced that he will leave at the end of the season. It is our information here at the Transfer Window that a deal to Barcelona has been agreed in principle in terms of a contract. he will have to take a pay cut. He currently earns £230,000 after tax at City, but is willing to accept around £150,000 in order to play at Camp Nou. Now, Duncan, this is interesting because you mentioned before about Antoine Griezmann possibly leaving. We know that Barcelona are in a difficult financial situation. We also know that Aguero has a very close friendship with Leo Messi, who of course lost his other bestie in Luis Suarez to Atletico last summer. It kind of looks like a good fit all round. Would you put your money on Aguero being a Barcelona player next summer, next season?
It's something they've had in place for a long time now. The outline discussions have been there for a while, but not their first choice. I'm told that the further discussions on the contract been accelerated over the last 2 weeks, and it's pretty much there to be signed off on. Same scenario as Gini Wijnaldum. Wijnaldum, a player that Koeman had asked for, pre-contract in place, and just ready to be signed off on, so he comes to the club.
But Koeman's position is now under doubt, Duncan, and probably that has been magnified by the fact that they failed to sign Memphis Depay under Koeman's direction. And now you have also the bid that we reported on the podcast for Erling Haaland. Not I'm saying that Koeman has knocked that back, but it does seem to me that Joan Laporta is taking more control over recruitment policy at Barcelona.
Well, Laporta is in ultimate control of all this, and he's raising the money get their debt situation in a shape where they can spend on players this summer. Wants a headline signing, wants a name to build a new Barcelona around, and Erling Haaland is the primary target. I'm not hearing that he's given up on Haaland already, and that Aguero will be the replacement for him, you know, the second prize, because they haven't been able to get Haaland. Koeman, as you say, his position is in doubt. Barcelona have been looking for alternatives as coach, are still looking, and as I understand it, still to make a final decision on whether they allow Koeman to carry on into the next season. I think basically they're operating on a lot of tiers at the moment, to try and get a structure in place where they can be more competitive on the field, and Laporta's dealing with a lot of moving parts because of that debt issue he has to resolve. Because the Super League fell through, that would have been a major salve to their financial issues, and given them a certainty of revenue going forward that would have helped secure short-term debt to cover the hole in their accounts at present. There's no doubt Aguero wants to go to Barcelona. That's his choice. And I think for the reasons you indicate, relationship with Lionel Messi and the opportunity to finally play at one of the top two clubs in Spanish football. So from the side of the player, does he want to go there above other offers? Is he prepared to go there for less money than other clubs are offering? Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly the case that Barcelona are considering appointing legendary player Xavi as their next manager. It is our understanding that despite the fact he signed a new contract with Al Sadd, where he currently coaches, that he has a get out stroke break clause with that club, and that he would be available in the summer to take over at Barcelona. Joan Laporta is a huge admirer, as well as being someone who's dealt with Xavi over the years as in terms of him being a player and captain at Barca. I suppose, Duncan, if Xavi did take over, it would be probably a more inviting place to come for some players, given that he's got that younger mentality, he has the Barcelona, and I'm almost scared to say it now, DNA, to go with his already coaching experience. But it's definitely the case, given this season and the disappointments, that Barcelona need to look at themselves and decide what the future holds with regards to how they achieve success.
Xavi would be the populist appointment. That's the one that would go down well with the supporters. But as we've talked about in this podcast for some time, Xavi wants to come in on his terms. He wants to control everything. He wants to change the sports director. He wants to take charge of the academy. He wants to be directing which players come in, as well as running the first team. So think, you know, regardless of what the relationship is with Laporta, and regardless of the populism that's involved in bringing Xavi back to the club, think about how much power Laporta would be ceding if he gave that managerial role on the terms that Xavi is demanding, just after he's got back in at president. It's a big move, and also you're doing it for someone who there is absolutely no guarantee he will be a success as a coach. It's a slightly better appointment than the Andrea Pirlo one at Juventus, because he has actually had the experience of coaching for a couple of seasons. But he's been coaching in Qatar with easily the best squad in Qatar. In his first season, he made a mess of it and lost the title and lost it comprehensively. Talked to people who've coached against him there, and they told me they weren't very impressed by the way he was running the team. So maybe he's learned enough in those couple of seasons in Qatar to take on a Barcelona job, which is, you know, it's not Pep Guardiola coming in to take over the most talented squad probably football's ever seen. It's a dysfunctional club with an imbalanced squad, with a lot of change required to it. And, you know, if Xavi comes, he has to play one kind of football. And are Barcelona that squad he has, or the squad he can build with the funds that are available to them, set up to play that kind of football? To me, that is a risky appointment and a risky road for them to go down.
To be fair to Xavi, he's gone to Qatar, a country he probably used to go maybe once or twice on holiday to. He would know very little about the football there, and any coach going into...
He played there for several seasons. He went there for a massive payoff contract to finish his career. He knew the league.
I mean, I meant managing, Duncan, not playing.
Yeah, but he's not coming in coaching blind into the Qatar league. He knows the league, he knows the players. There's a big demand for him to be coach, but if you look at what's happened with appointments of younger managers who used to be star players for their clubs across European football over the last few seasons, I think you tread that path very carefully.
Well, you're very correct in saying that Xavi would be the popular appointment, both in the dressing room and with the socios of Barcelona Football Club. So it will be interesting to see if indeed Koeman is to leave, which is definitely a possibility. From one fairly inexperienced coach to another who has been very experienced, Nuno Espirito Santo has announced that he will leave Wolverhampton Wanderers at the end of the season. A story that, of course, our tremendous guru of knowledge in transfers had flagged up on the Transfer Window podcast some weeks ago. Duncan, is Nuno leaving because he's got an offer somewhere else, or is he leaving because he thinks he's done as much as he possibly can at Wolves?
Look, as we explained when we broke that story on the podcast, he feels he's come to the end of the road at Wolves. He's done what he can. He's ready for a change of scene. I think he's aware that because of the financial situation in football, and because particularly of the financial situation in China, where the Chinese government have told investor companies to reduce their expenditure on football in particular, but in especially in European football clubs, that Fosun are unable to finance a rebuild of the squad or additions to the squad as they would normally.
And they
have
are
done.
Selling as well, Duncan. That's the thing, isn't it? They're selling their best players.
Well, yes, they're, again, story we broke on the podcast, they put their three best talents on the market in order to raise cash to regenerate the squad. That's the situation that they're in. So Nuno had made that decision. They were trying to find him a club to go to before he announced his departure. We should expect Bruno Lage, the former Benfica coach, to replace Nuno, because as we reported on the podcast, a provisional agreement had been put in place for him to be the successor should Nuno leave this summer, which he now has.
One question. Nuno to Spurs.
I'm sure he's been offered to Tottenham.
Yeah, George Mendes would not certainly be shy in calling Daniel Leveridge.
Yeah, I think 1 year ago, that would be a more viable appointment when Nuno's status was higher because Wolves had had back-to-back really good seasons. This season has been more of a struggle for them. And you know, there are obvious reasons why it's been more of a struggle, particularly the loss of Raul Jimenez, one of the best centre-forwards in the Premier League, from what was always quite a tight, narrow squad to start with. I don't think he would be a bad appointment for Tottenham at all. My question would be, is Daniel Levy prepared to put another Portuguese coach, a coach who's associated with the same representation company as Jose Mourinho, in charge at this moment at a time where he is clearly looking to get back into the supporters' good books? I think the PR aspects of this appointment are very important. And in that DNA message to the supporters that he published yesterday, there was a clear message about going back to Tottenham style attacking aggressive football, and while Nuno is very good at creating teams who score goals and beat opponents, he's not a front foot manager. He might be able to become a front foot manager with a higher quality of squad, but he works on percentages. So the perception, I think, from Tottenham supporters would be, you know, Espirito Santo, no thanks. Give us a more starry eyed name than that.
You say starry eyed name, but I can't really see outside of perhaps Max Allegri, someone who can go to Tottenham and placate the fans, especially if they're going to be losing Harry Kane, and produce the kind of football that they expect, etc., etc. Whereas a more under the radar appointment, I think, would be potentially much more productive for Spurs.
Well, just from a supporter reception perspective, and I'm not saying this is the right route for Tottenham to go down. If the supporters are presented with Nuno Espirito Santo as the next coach, or if the supporters are presented with Graham Potter as the next coach, which one is more popular from a supporter perspective, given his image in English football at present?
Well, yeah, that's a difficult one. I mean, I'd say Nuno has proven himself since being promoted to be more successful. And Graham Potter is someone still whose star is rising, but, you know, has yet to get to the stages where, you know, Brighton are anywhere near top 10. And obviously Spurs' ambitions are top 6, top 4, or top 4 certainly. So if there was to be a less starry-eyed, as you put it, appointment, then I would say Nuno would be favourite over Potter.
I agree that I think Nuno Espirito Santo would be a better appointment, but from the perspective of who's perceived to play attacking football and to be a modern, progressive coach, I think Potter, with the PR he's had this season, And obviously he has that benefit of being an English coach. So whatever he does gets magnified in its quality by a press who are desperate to see another successful English coach. They're just about to lose the most successful one they've had for decades, Roy Hodgson. He said he's leaving Premier League football, at least for the time being. So I think that if you were to do a vox pop of Tottenham supporters, they'd prefer Potter to Espirito Santo. And I think that would be more important to Levy at the moment than actual qualities as a coach. Is he good enough to do a job for me, and will the supporters be happy with it? I think that's what he's thinking at present.
It's a very difficult balance to maintain the things that you've said, i.e. as Scott as a coach and the supporters being happy with the appointment. With Tottenham, I think they're used to having fairly superstar names, if you like, appointed. And therefore, I think with Potter, they might be slightly disappointed, even if he is an exceptionally good coach, which he's proven himself to be so far, but working with obviously limited resources and also achieving results which equate to those resources as well. But Potter certainly got potential, for sure. And I think the win over Manchester City last week was certainly proof of his ability to take a very difficult situation, being 2-0 down in the first half, and turn it into a victory of 3-2, one which Pep did not particularly like. And we'll come on to that on the Donkey Award in a moment. We will, however, briefly discuss the situation at Celtic Football Club, where they are in a moment of transition. They have an interim manager. Very, very disturbing that their outgoing chief executive, Peter Lawlshouse, and his family were threatened in a violent disruption at the start of this week. We understand that their pursuit of Eddie Howe is becoming a source of great frustration for both the owner, Dermot Desmond, and the incoming chief executive, Dominic Mackay, as Lawl goes into retirement as of the first of next month. And Duncan, it's not really surprising, is it, that they should look for a plan B, given that Howe has had more than three meetings with the Celtic hierarchy with regards to replacing Neil Lennon, and has yet to commit. And as you and I have discussed, he could have signed a pre-contract or a heads of agreement, which he's not done, and that Celtic's executives are becoming very, very impatient now with regards to what Howe's intentions are. We've reported on the podcast that he would prefer to stay in England and in the Premier League, and is hopeful that the Crystal Palace job will be his. What do Celtic do now?
I think, as you say, they have to look for a plan B. If you decide you want to hire a coach, you interview him, he says he's interested in taking the job, you offer him the job, and then what? It's probably 2 months now that they've been in this position of stasis, where they are signalling that I will be their next manager, and briefing Scottish media that they'll be the next manager. But they don't have a formal signature on a contract from Howe. And in our information, Howe's representatives are pushing him for other jobs. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all that Eddie Howe thinks he has an outside opportunity of the Tottenham Hotspur job, given that a couple of years ago, when he was in the ascendancy of young English coach, when he was in the Graham Potter position, he was being talked about as potential Arsenal manager, and would certainly have been high on a list of candidates for Tottenham had the job opened up at that stage. He clearly would prefer to stay in England and stay in the south of England, and feels that he can keep Celtic waiting until he's explored the other options and has that job to fall back on. That's quite a slap in the face to Celtic Football Club, because if they see a manager who has significant achievements in English football, but nowhere near coaching at the top of the English game, all of his work at one club, quite a ignominious final season where they were relegated and where there was some significant problems within the squad during that period, preferring to go to a club like Crystal Palace than to one of the two top clubs in Scotland and a club that has the opportunity to play Champions League football next season. It's not what you expect. You know that you have less financial resource than Crystal Palace, but what Celtic can offer a manager is a platform to prove themselves a winner. And it is a real challenge at present. Steven Gerrard and Rangers have built a team who play a very well-drilled and effective form of football that comprehensively took the title off Celtic. Celtic supporters are unhappy and want to see Rangers knocked back off the perch next season. But it's a great opportunity, the Celtic job. And if you do that, if you succeed there, you can see a very recent example of a manager who is a leading candidate for the Tottenham job, who doesn't particularly seem to want to take the Tottenham job because he thinks he has a better situation at Leicester City at present. So regenerating his career by going to Scottish football, winning there, coming back into one of the prime jobs in the Premier League, and now being talked about as a future. It's not Tottenham Hotspur is the best job opportunity open to him. He's being talked about as a future Manchester City manager. He would like to be talked about as a future Manchester United manager. Maybe if Solskjaer has another questionable season, that job might open up next campaign. So I think Eddie Howe turns this one down or keeps Celtic waiting at his peril.
Well, as a Celtic fan, I'd like to offer my congratulations to Steven Gerrard on winning his first league title. And I'm pleased for him, as someone who I've known for more than 20 years. Notice I've not mentioned the club he manages. Duncan, you mentioned Steven Gerrard there at Rangers. Also, his partner in the England midfield, Frank Lampard, is out of work, as we know. We understand that he would not be, in terms of the interest of West Bromwich Albion, averse to talking to West Brom's executives, because he feels that perhaps his time at Derby County, it was only a year, but they were defeated in the playoff final by Aston Villa. He stepped backwards to go to the Midlands club and perhaps win promotion. He would have the benefit of the parachute payment and a good squad already, but also money to invest in new players as well. Is it a good fit, Duncan?
Well, you said partner in the England midfield. I thought you were going to say partner in crime there, given what happened in that England midfield.
Which crime did they commit exactly?
The golden generation that was supposed to sweep all of the world and ahead of them and take the World Cup back to England.
Well, that's our 2002 memories together.
It's interesting that he's thinking that way. I can see the calculation that dropping it back down into the Championship to work with a good squad of players where you have a bit of financial resource to build something with the expectation that you can go a step further than you did at Derby County and get promotion to the Premier League and then keep them in the Premier League. And, you know, if you can put together those 2 years of work then you're in that Brendan Rodgers scenario where the bigger clubs will look to employ you again. And you've told us, and this is obviously coming direct from Frank himself, he feels that he rushed into the Chelsea job. It wasn't the optimal time to take it. He had to take it because the opportunity was there. Derby was kind of a similar scenario. He's conscious enough to know that, well, we've been talking about Xavi and we've talked about young coaches in this podcast. He's conscious enough to know that there are stages of his development to go through to become a top manager. He wants to be a top manager. He's a supremely competitive individual who loves being involved in football. There is the element of, is this time to take a sabbatical and wait for the correct offer? But I think the calculation that West Bromwich Albion is a reasonable opportunity and one that's worth paying more attention to than Crystal Palace, for example, is an intelligent one on his part.
I think Frank is someone who's very considered in his attitude to his coaching career, and I think it's admirable that he doesn't feel that 18 months at Chelsea means he automatically deserves another job in the Premier League, and also that perhaps going back to the Championship, as he did with Derby when he started his coaching career, could be a valuable experience and lesson in terms of furthering his experience and education in coaching. And therefore, as unlikely as some people might think it seems, I don't think it is impossible that should the circumstances be right, that he would accept that job to replace what was called the Red Adair, i.e. Big Sam, although obviously we see him as Fireman Sam, firing up his Granada instead of the fire engine. It is that time of the week where we present the most prestigious award in football, which of course is the Donkey Award. And this week we are going to say that Pep Guardiola is our preferred nomination, but also the award named after him for his performance in the end of the match against Brighton last Tuesday night when they lost 3-2 at the Amex Stadium, and Guardiola protested vehemently against the way that Graham, quotes Harry Potter, celebrated the first goal. In fact, our information is that he demanded respect from Potter at the end of the game, refused to give him the now obvious fist bump instead of handshake, etc., etc. And indeed, we were also told that the entire Manchester City bench behaved very badly throughout that game. Therefore, this is...
To be fair, they're not used to opposition managers celebrating goals on a broomstick.
Quidditch. it's also the case that it seems Pep does not agree that opposition managers are allowed to celebrate goals for their own team, even if they are 2-0 down. So... this is the Donkey Award for Pep Guardiola's being a bad loser. Now, Duncan, in kind of contrast with other Donkey Awards, I'm just going to give you three names in the nominations, which I hope are in the golden envelope. Give me a second while I open it. It's improving a bit. Oh, there we go. It's a bit easier than usual. Right, so I'm going to give you three names. You're going to tell me who you think is the worst loser and also why. Number one, Jurgen Klopp. Number two, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And number three, the man who could claim his own award, and that is Pep Guardiola.
Look, Jurgen Klopp, we don't really have to go into much detail about the list of performances he's come up with after losing matches. There's a Scottish comedy series called Only an Excuse, and I think it's an apt summary of Jurgen Klopp when things go wrong for him on the football field. Solskjaer has had some pretty special ones this season. Remember the...
Was that a reference to Jose?
No,
he's had some pretty special ones.
Remember the raising of the idea that Manchester United's home form this season was down to the red seats and the players not being able to distinguish their teammates from the surrounding stand.
Fergie-esque.
Which seems to have been undermined somewhat by them losing their last two home games with the red seats hidden and spectators back in the stadium. But he has had a few others as well, including mentioning that that those fan protests had an impact and that he didn't want to use that as an excuse, but then citing it as an excuse immediately afterwards. But I think both of those are superseded by Pep Guardiola. He doesn't lose very often. But when he loses badly. And I think this week's rant at Graham Harry Potter matched up with his pretty much most of his bench after losing 3-2. Yes, they had a very bad red card decision go against them, but they just won the Premier League. A few days beforehand, they'd had their big party, he'd been doing his karaoke, he'd had it shown around the nation, he'd people laughing and amused by Pep Guardiola, and then he loses an irrelevant game in the sense of irrelevant to Manchester City's final position in the league, relevant to them earning any money, whereas Brighton, it is significant. They can push them up the table and add to their resources for next season, and he acts like that, so he wins his own award.
Nothing worse than a lack of grace in defeat, as someone once said. Jockstein, it was, said that. This has been the news before it becomes news. If you want to engage with us, please do on YouTube, social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Duncan's on Twitter at Duncan Castles. I'm on Twitter at GarboSJ. We will be back with you next week. Until then, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.